Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a discussion about the very blunt and bleak assessment of the economy by President Obama's top economic official, Larry Summers, who warned of a Japan-like lost decade unless our sick economy, constrained by demand, is given a boost in confidence by borrowing, lending and spending. Timothy Canova, Professor of International Economic Law and Co-Director of the Center on Global Law and Development at the Chapman University School of Law, joins us to assess Summers' remarks and the likelihood of the White House listening to his recommendations. Then we will go to Istanbul, Turkey, to speak with Hugh Pope, the former Wall Street Journal bureau chief in Istanbul, who is now a senior analyst with the International Crisis Group. We will discuss yesterday's election victory by the ruling party and Turkey's growing concern about the possible collapse of the Assad regime next door in Syria and the flow of refugees already pouring over the border. Then Tom Lutz joins us in the studio, editor of the forthcoming Los Angeles Review of Books. He just resigned as chairman of the Creative Writing Department at the University of California, Riverside, to protest the political demagoguery and corruption that is destroying an educational institution that was once the envy of the world. We'll talk with someone who's mad as hell that California's legislators, rather than educate the best of our citizens, instead enrich people who profit from imprisoning the poorest. Joining us now is Timothy Canova, who is Professor of International Economic Law and Co-Director of the Center for Global Law and Development at the Chapman University School of Law. His research crosses the disciplines of law, public finance, economics, and history, and he was an early critic of financial deregulation and warned of the dangers of the bubble economy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Timothy Canova.
Thank you very much.
And the warning by the top economic advisor of the Obamas, Lawrence Summers, in this, Sunday's Financial Times, I think was pretty powerful and perhaps somewhat overdue, given that most of the economic discussion is almost surreal. We're talking about a deficit crisis, or a hoax, if you will, not a revenue crisis. We're talking about absurdities like the debt ceiling, and we're not talking about unemployment and jobs.
Yes, certainly it was overdue. It's actually in Monday's Financial Times. And in his piece in the Times, he does talk about the, you could say, a different cause and effect than we're hearing these days in Washington. He talks about the deficits as a result of high unemployment, which is a very welcome perspective at this point. You know, there are about 14 million Americans who are officially unemployed, and perhaps another 10 to 15 million Americans who are underemployed or discouraged workers. That's a lot of people who are not paying their Social Security and Medicare taxes. Income tax receipts are down, property tax receipts, you name it, across the board for every level of government, federal, state, or local levels. The deficits are a result of this type of underemployment and unemployment crisis.
And that simple message has not been put out until now. I mean, you wrote a piece, Timothy Canova, critical of Austin Goolsbee, who still is the chief of the President's Economic Council, although he's on his way to the University of Chicago. And his whole rationale seems to be somewhat in sync with the Tea Party and others, who are basically making this argument that only the private sector can rescue us, and our problems are, well, Goolsbee suggests, I'm just quoting you, that it is proper for a government to take the lead in rescuing Wall Street banks, but when it comes to creating jobs for American workers, all the government can do is provide tax incentives for businesses to hire.
That's right, and we've seen that this approach has been completely ineffective. There was a piece last week in the New York Times that reported that for all of these tax incentives for businesses to be hiring, most of the response from business was to invest in capital and not in labor and to continue outsourcing jobs to overseas. So, you know, we can continue to try to provide tax incentives and hope that the private sector will respond by hiring. But there's lots of reasons to think, and Summers makes a good case of this in the Financial Times, that there are just not incentives for businesses to be hiring workers when there's this kind of slack in the economy. when consumers are underwater, out of work, and there's not real confidence that the demand will be there to sell the goods at the end of the day.
Well, America's largest corporations are sitting on more than $2 trillion in earnings.
That's right. That's right. That should be proof enough. Now, we've allowed the narrative to be recast that when you listen to the right-wing voices, they'll say that businesses are not investing or spending the $2 trillion because they want more assurances of lower taxes and less government regulation. But, you know, I think they really have this narrative backwards. With this many Americans out of work, there's just not the right incentives for anyone to be spending.
So, obviously, I don't know that it's obvious, but I suspect that the White House is not necessarily listening to Summers. But who do you think will? Because as we mentioned in the beginning, his clarity on the real economic challenges ahead and the warnings that we are halfway through a lost decade a la Japan, and we can avert a lost decade by recognizing the economic realities, which he's outlined, I think, in a very clear way. And, of course, it sounds probably to most people counterintuitive, but the truth of the matter is you cannot scrimp your way back to prosperity. You have to spend your way back to prosperity. And the Republicans have seized on this deficit hoax and they want to use it, in fact, to cut what little we have of a social safety net. And you've got the Gang of Six compromisers sitting around drinking that Kool-Aid.
Well, it's true. Unfortunately, the Democrats allowed this to happen when they had control of both the House and Senate and the White House for the last 2 years. What did they do with it? They didn't move forward with any kind of public jobs and public training programs. Instead, President Obama created this deficit reduction commission, which really skewed the entire debate towards deficit reduction. And for jobs, he created a White House Jobs and Competitiveness Council headed by the CEO of General Electric and Jeff Immelt, who in just today's Wall Street Journal has a piece talking about how they're going to create jobs. And it's really much the same. It's streamlining regulations and trying to match up workers' training with where the demands are, trying to liberalize visa requirements so that we can bring in more tourists and that'll help the economy. There's absolutely no recognition of the idea of public jobs programs in a depression. And I use the word depression quite consciously. You know, you can look at the 1930s, and most of the 1930s were periods of economic growth. After Roosevelt took office, there was one recession in the 30s, but otherwise there was economic growth throughout that decade, and still we refer to it as the Great Depression because there was mass unemployment. And I think we have the same kinds of conditions today in many ways. The official unemployment rate is 9.1%, but when you have the wider classification that the Bureau of Labor Statistics uses that brings in discouraged workers, it brings in those who have dropped out of the labor market, brings in part-time workers who want full-time work but can't find it, we're really talking about one out of five Americans are unemployed or underemployed. So it is it's a jobs depression. Consumers are underwater to a frightening degree, which continues to be a drag on their spending. There are all of these conditions that suggest we should be looking at the same kinds of approaches they used in the 1930s. We had a civilian conservation corps in the 1930s that employed millions of young Americans on conservation programs in the nation's parks and forests, and including clearing underbrush and preventing forest fires. We're now looking at a fire season with what's perhaps the largest fire in Arizona history. It's gotten so big that the air in Albuquerque is going to become unbreathable soon. And it's in a part of Arizona, the fire is, with more than a 20% unemployment rate. And you can go right down the list. During the Depression, we had the Works Projects Administration that employed millions of adults, including Ronald Reagan's father. You had the Public Works Administration that built the Triborough Bridge, LaGuardia Airport. I mean, it's an impressive list of what was accomplished during the 1930s that put people to work and gave them hope. And that's wholly lacking in the discussion today. Larry Summers makes a veiled reference to this when in his Financial Times piece, he says that it's a false economy to defer infrastructure
maintenance and replacement.
That's right. And that the government should take advantage of this moment when 10-year interest rates are below 3% and construction unemployment approaches 20%. That's, you know, two sentences in a rather lengthy op-ed. It's not really a full-throated endorsement of major public works programs right now. And I think that's what's really needed in this discussion, that this public discussion about the crisis.
Well, but prior to that, he frames it in a way I think that's accessible, which is to say that this, the situation can only be resolved by increases in confidence, borrowing and lending, and spending. And of course, that is a heresy to the kind of political debate that we're having. But somebody's got to call it as it is, that the deficit talk's a hoax. The debt ceiling is just stupid. We've got to get real here, and we don't have much of a social safety net. And if that is the agenda of the Republicans, to use a phony crisis to eviscerate what's left of a social safety net with Medicare and Social Security, then the Democrats ought to be putting it on billboards, for God's sake.
Yeah, I don't disagree. The bailouts, all the props for Wall Street and for the banks, whether we're talking about the trillions from the Federal Reserve or the hundreds of billions from the Troubled Asset Relief Program from TARP, they didn't just prop up the banks. They really propped up this whole financial edifice. So here we are 2.5 years later, and the credit rating agencies that are so implicated in bringing this crisis on to begin with by giving AAA investment grade ratings to subprime mortgages and securities, they are now in the position of being the arbiters of what's an acceptable level of deficits for sovereign nations. And when you look at what happened just really a year ago, the world was all in stimulus mode in 2009, and then in early 2010, it was Moody's and Standards & Poor's that started ringing the alarms, saying that Greece and some other countries in Europe were just incurring deficits that were too large. And by too large, it was 10% of gross domestic product. Now, that's not much different than what we have here in the United States now. And yet, when you compare it to the 1940s, to what actually got the United States out of the Depression once and for all, you know, it was World War II spending. It was the GI Bill of Rights and the Marshall Plan after the war. Well, at the peak of the 1940s, the federal government was incurring a deficit of 30 to 35% of gross domestic product. Now, who's to say that perhaps once every 50 years or once every century, the system gets so upside down, the distribution of wealth and income gets so top-heavy, and the economy hits such a depression that governments may need to rebalance by incurring somewhat bigger deficits for a few years, putting people to work, recreating the middle class, finding big projects like a moon project or an interstate highway or a high-speed rail. But apparently, who's to say it's not appropriate is the credit rating agencies.
Well, I just don't understand, though, the people that that supposed to be the party that's supposed to be more connected to middle class and working Americans and not necessarily so beholden to the billionaires who are doing so well, why they can't get out of their own way. And it's worth noting, Timothy Canova, that how much Summers has been vilified along with Geithner by the political left in this country as the enablers of the deregulation. And they've been thrown in with all of those that caused the meltdown in the fall of 2008. But it seems to me that actually Summers, we need more people like that instead of these sort of milquetoast, sort of centrist wussy Democrats like Goolsbee and Cass Sunstein and others, who seem to be all too ready to serve up government programs as sacrificial offerings and eviscerate the social safety net.
Well, that is true. You look at Goolsbee, Obama's chief economic advisor in the White House, and President Obama himself. Time and time again, they've said similar things, that it's the private sector that creates jobs. Goolsbee was being interviewed on Stephen Colbert's Comedy Central, and Colbert said several times, the federal government has never created a single job. And Goolsbee just sat there. He didn't disagree with it whatsoever. You know, and this is a complete slander. It's a complete misreading of history to say that the federal government has never created a job. You know, the federal government has actually led the way in the computerization, the internet, you name it, through major public programs such as NASA and the Moonshot. You know, there are some economists out there that have been saying things even, you know, more far-reaching than what Summers is saying right now. Unfortunately, Summers waited till he was out of the White House to be making these kinds of pronouncements. But you have Robert Shiller. He's a Yale University professor of economics and finance. And a full year ago, he talked about the federal government creating a civilian conservation corps. And he said that for only $30 billion, which in the scheme of things, when we're talking about trillions of dollars for Wall Street, $30 billion is not that much. He said for $30 billion, the federal government could employ 1 million Americans in a civilian conservation corps for a year. You know, we have the resources to be putting people back to work. The problem is we don't have the political will, and both parties in Washington seem to be captivated by a very right-wing, laissez-faire type of philosophy that only the private sector is capable of leading a recovery.
Well, it could be, at the risk of being cynical, Timothy Canova, it could be worse than that. It in many ways, it does seem that the Republicans have an investment in the economy not getting any better. Mitch McConnell already said that his greatest priority was to get rid of Obama. They're sitting on, corporate America is sitting on all this money that we discussed earlier. They're pushing all of this deficit stuff, which is counterintuitive because you don't cut spending when you're trying to stimulate an economy. So unless somebody, you'd think out of political survival, they'd want to step up to the plate, because only if the Democrats get a majority back in the House and in the Senate and pass the 60 threshold in the Senate, they won't be able to do a damn thing.
You're absolutely right. The Democrats at this point, in my view, should be raising these kinds of jobs programs, even knowing that the Republicans in the House are going to vote it down and prevent it from happening. They need to really present a clear alternative to the American people, just as a matter of smart politics. But beyond that, they've got to find the tools to be putting people to work between now and next election day. And they're somewhat out of tools because of the Republican control of the House of Representatives. One tool that they do have still is the TARP program. The TARP program is really a revolving fund of $700 billion that it was used to prop up the banks. It was used to get Chrysler and General Motors back on their feet, but it hasn't been used for much else ever since. There were some proposals a couple of years ago when TARP was first started of using some of the TARP funds to help modify mortgages on a mass scale, but that's gotten nowhere. And, you know, the 1930s had their equivalent to TARP. It was the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, which at the outset under President Hoover, it was being used to prop up banks and insurance companies and railroads. And when Roosevelt was campaigning for president, he referred to that as trickle-down economics. He called for a recovery program that builds from the bottom up and not from the top down. And he called for using a portion of the Resolution Trust Corporation funds for loans for small businesses and farmers and homeowners facing foreclosure. And the Obama administration doesn't even have to go back to Congress. The Treasury Secretary has the authority right now to start using TARP funds. Like the Resolution Trust Corporation, it can make loans to state and local governments. The Resolution Trust Corporation did that during the 1930s to help pay for local school teacher salaries. TARP funds could be used to try to prop up this mortgage market and help modifications of ordinary Americans who are facing foreclosure. I'm not optimistic that the administration will use this, one of the last policy tools it has left. And part of it is ideology, and part of it is the fear of being called socialist again. And part of it is that they've got Timothy Geithner heading the Treasury, who, you know, Treasury administers the TARP funds. I guess my frustration is they're going to be called socialists anyway. They've been called socialists for the past 2 years. And what they've mostly been practicing is socialism for banks and insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies, but not for the middle class in any significant way.
Well, Timothy Canova, I thank you so much for joining us today to discuss Lawrence Summers' article in the Financial Times, How to Avoid Our Own Lost Decade. Again, a very strong warning, I think, from somebody that's been President Obama's top economic advisor.
You're very welcome.
Again, Timothy Canova is Professor of International Economic Law and Co-Director of the Center for Global Law and Development at the Chapman University School of Law. His research crosses the disciplines of law, public finance, economics, and history, and he was an early critic of financial deregulation and warned of the dangers of the bubble economy. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back going to Istanbul, Turkey, to talk about tensions on the border with Syria.